A couch potato warning is in effect as DirecTV transforms Thanksgiving into Streamsgiving. DirecTV's got free TV nationwide. With a heavy front of 60-plus live channels and a steady stream of streaming apps, conditions are perfect for nonstop entertainment. So hunker down on the couch and sign up for your free trial of My Entertainment from DirecTV. I'm going to watch some free TV.
Start streaming My Entertainment from DirecTV now at streamsgiving.com. My free is free. Paid services. 5-day free trial, then auto renews monthly. Cancel anytime. Temporary credit hold may apply. Restrictions apply. See streamsgiving.com for details. AI produced.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. In July, it is time to assess the United States Supreme Court. We're between July 4th, celebrating the American Republic, and July 14th, celebrating what you'd have to say is a breakaway from monarchy once upon a time in France, critical to the success of the American Republic. So time to celebrate the institutions, in this instance, the Supreme Court. The Roberts Supreme Court. Richard, a very good evening to you. We often speak of the Supreme Court in history. So I'm trying to imagine 100 years from now, the Roberts Supreme Court in history. And after all of the articles that I've read recently about the members and the question, is it conservative? Is it not conservative? Is it confused? What I come up with is a wonderful statement from a representative of the American Civil Liberties Union. This is in the New York Times, David Leinhardt's column, of the court. It's nowhere near as bad as people thought. I think that probably is the version that will be recorded in history when, in the indefinite future, the United States is measured in heaven. It's nowhere near as bad as people thought. So we have a Supreme Court that neither disappoints nor pleases. And I could turn that quote around, I'm guessing, and go to the conservative representatives, and they would say it's nowhere good as people thought. Let's begin with your measure, Richard. Are you surprised by the Roberts Court where it is here in the beginning of the 21st century? Good evening to you.
Hi, good evening. No, I'm not really that much surprised, because essentially when you start to look at justices, the first thing you want to do is to break them down individually and see how they stand on particular issues. And it turns out that there's not a necessary correlation. So somebody could be very conservative on discrimination laws and quite liberal with respect to police practices. So that what happens is when these constellations start to fall, the way in which a case is presented may often have a great deal to do with the way in which this thing comes out. I think it's generally going to be the case that the three liberal justices will be closer to one another on a wide variety of circumstances. But when you start taking the other six, I think it's A, a jumble, and B, if there is a fissure, it would be between the middle three and the right three, this not holding up universally. So the middle three, I think, would be the chief justice, who's probably furthest to the left, which is not to say that he's on the left. Then I think Justice Kavanaugh is probably the median justice, and then Justice Barrett sitting there. And then there's a bit of a gap, I think, and you start getting out to Gorsuch, Alito, and Thomas. And at this particular point, it's hard to know who is more conservative by some measure because of this aggregation problem. So that's the first point. The second point is that there are many times when there are nine Supreme Court justices who all come out the same way. I basically believe that that's not a sign of anything. That is, if you get nine people to agree and they're all basically wrong on a given proposition, then it seems to me that you should attack the entire court for a failure rather than praising it for its unanimity. So to give you but one example, I spent a long time working on the stuff having to do with the Fannie and Freddie reorganization that took place in 2008, 2012, and so forth. The court was unanimous saying that the government could take all the money out of the conservatorship and put it into the Treasury. It misread every conceivable statutes associated with it. It was a unanimous position. It was decided by Justice Alito. Everybody agreed, and it's probably the worst decision that came down this year, making complete balderdash out of a statute which actually was pretty elegant as put together what was grievously misapplied in favor of the government by others. So that's a case of unanimity, which as far as I'm concerned is a really dark mark against every single justice on the United States Supreme Court. Starting with that situation, then you have to kind of go back down and say, well, what about the 6-3 cases? Well, they're not going to be, well, sometimes the 3-6 go each way. So in the Fulton case having to do with religion, essentially it was the middle three went to the left. And what they did is they struck down a particularly insidious statute in Philadelphia. But they did so on very narrow grounds. And then Justice Alito, with whom I agreed on that point, said the real root of the difficulty is with the Smith test having to do with disparate impact and religious freedoms and accommodation. But one has to remember that that opinion was written by none other than Justice Scalia, a known conservative on perhaps his worst opinion on his time on the court. The Auer versus the United States is a Robbins rather is another contest for that. But it then shows you just how difficult it is when you're doing all of this stuff to make these sort of aggregations. So if I had to do it, I prefer the second formulation, which is they're not quite as conservative slash libertarian as one might hope. Leonhardt basically writes in the usual liberal tone in which there's no doubt whatsoever about the outcome of any particular case. You know what truth says, and therefore you don't have to argue about anything. What you then do is you just pronounce from your Olympian heights that these guys are good or these guys are bad. And the scattergram that we've seen today actually will have, and I'll stop on this note, one important consequence. It's going to make it extremely difficult for people to think that this is the kind of circumstances where you have to pack the Supreme Court going in unknown directions when, in fact, the landscape is as confused as it seems to be today.
Richard, let us begin with the Roberts Court. When you first introduced to me the possibility that we're looking at something not so clear as conservative and liberal. Let's begin with 2012, when we first started to discuss Mr. Roberts as surprising. That was, of course, the Obamacare decision passed down in the summer of an election year. And Justice Roberts, at the time and since then, has presented a puzzle to me, an amateur, which is that he is a conservative representative. That's clear when he was appointed. That was clear when he had his hearings. That was clear when he had his Chief Justice hearings. And yet, the word is invented. Let's say it this way. He created a possibility that permitted Obamacare to go forward as a tax, despite the fact that the administration itself had said it was not a tax. I recall that moment is when there were lots of attention to Roberts as we were robbed, or he tricked us, or he's turned this around and we no longer trust him because he created a tax that permitted Obamacare to remain constitutional. And all the challenges since then, I believe, have stood up because of Justice Roberts' decision. Is he the leader of a conservative court? Obamacare certainly is a profound piece of legislation.
The answer is it was 5-4 the other way. He probably originally voted to strike the statute down as the common guess, and then for some reason decided to switch. His conservatism is not defined, I think, in terms of ideology so much, although that's also an overgeneralization. But what he is he does not believe that the court as an institution should, in these kinds of cases, upset a huge accommodation that has been reached by the political forces of the United States in some something as unwieldy and complicated as the Obamacare statute. But to go back just a bit, remember the Obamacare statute was a straight partisan force. They had no Republican support whatsoever, and they managed to get it through the Senate, back to the House, back to the Senate on reconciliation to get it through, because they could have never gotten it through under the standard procedures. He said that he was a judge who was calling balls and strikes. One of the things that he didn't call correctly was what does it mean to say in the stage, an exchange established by a state, that's the only exchanges that would be eligible for various kinds of subsidies. And he said established by either a state or a federal government acting on behalf of a state, which is, to put it mildly, a linguistic switch. So the conservatives essentially said, here he is an umpire, and he's clearly on one side of the table, getting it wrong. And then what happens is it's also upholding a really terrible piece of legislation. Now, why is it terrible? Because the enormous cross subsidies that built into this particular statute don't seem to have any particular long-term benefit. There were many other ways in which you could achieve greater coverage through market liberalization rather than through forced transfer payments, but he didn't quite understand that. As to the medical mandate, whether it was or was not coercion, you know, he split the baby. He said, oh, you can't put this mandate in. I think he's actually wrong under modern commerce clause jurisdiction. And so he made it appear as though, well, my God, if you got this thing in there, the statute's going to fail under the commerce clause. What happens is when you repeal it, if that's the only problematic feature of the statute. It may mean that you can no longer justify it as a tax, but since there is no longer this exotic argument, you could justify it under the Commerce Clause. So I think the critics who say, aha, since he was wrong the first time, everything that followed was wrong. No, I think the repeal of the mandate makes it easier to sustain the statute. And I think in the recent case, it's a pretty exotic stretch to say that people in another state are going to have standing in order to decide whether or not a given state has decided its particular internal procedures correctly. So I think you again have to do what is necessary, constantly disaggregate the particular decisions, one from another, look at each under its own boat, and don't spend your time saying, oh, I hate Justice Roberts, whether you do or not. Try to figure out whether he's right or wrong. I mean, as an academic, my view is that the coalition is secondary to the soundness of the particular decision. And the basic attitude that I have is you have no friends when you're an academic. You just believe in certain kinds of principles, and then you let people line up. So I think it's perfectly appropriate, as I did, to criticize Justice Alito for what I thought was a perfectly dreadful opinion in this financial case, and then to say, I think he really did have a very good point when he wrote his opinion in the case having to do with religious freedom, and also a very important case, the Brinovich case, having to do with the voting rights. There was a semi-hysterical, not uninformed, but semi-hysterical opinion by Justice Kagan in the dissent. But I think actually Justice Alito gave a more accurate and more focused opinion on that sort of thing. So take it one at a time. Do it a la carte. Don't make the aggregations at the earlier stage. Try to get the individual cases right. And then let people decide what weight they're going to attach to what kind of case and why.
Richard Epstein, Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, and we're observing the Roberts Court, how history will regard it. History 100 years from now is easy because we can imagine the court of the 1921. When we come back, we'll apply it to perhaps too specific. This term just concluded, 65 cases. And how were they decided by the Roberts Court? And does it tell us whether the conservatives are disappointed or the liberals are disappointed or both sides are disappointed or is one is more disappointed than the other? And is that history? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Moro Casino. American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here.